Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today I am recording a little bit on the fly. I've just got back from a week in London, completing the final module in my 3-year training to become a fully certified somatic experiencing practitioner. And if you have been listening to previous episodes of this podcast, you probably heard me talk a little bit about my training as the years have gone on. And that's kind of what I thought I would do today. Is I have done zero preparation. I only got back from the training less than 48 hours ago, but it's Monday, and on Mondays I record a podcast, and it just seems fitting to just share a little bit, probably more so from the heart today, and just share a little bit about some of my experiences on the training and I guess just some words of wisdom or encouragement or a few lessons that may support you in your healing journey wherever you may find yourself in it today. So I have prepared nothing. And I also probably am still integrating and processing everything that I've received in the past week. And for that reason, this could just be a whole gobbled mess of a podcast, but I'm hoping that maybe there'll be just a little bit of sweetness or just a little bit of something that you can take from it today, and hopefully a nice, easy listening episode. You know, some of the more technical and content heavy episodes, I'm sure, are useful. But, you know, when your brain is already quite full and you're not feeling very well, it can be quite challenging to take on a lot of information. So hopefully today will just be a nice one you can put on while you lay down and take a little bit of a rest. So maybe I should start at the beginning, which is to say that in 2021, I began my journey to first become a trauma-informed practitioner. I did a training called Trauma and Somatics with Oriana Joy and Will Resnin. And that was a training that they had created specifically for helping professionals to be able to practice in a more trauma-informed way with their clients. And it was the stepping stone for me in this whole journey into better understanding the nervous system and better understanding trauma. So that was a 12-week course that I did. And both Will and Oriana are SEPs, so somatic experiencing practitioners, as well as many other things. And they were just fantastic role models, I guess, as I started this journey. And it was after completing the trauma-informed training that I got more curious about somatic experiencing specifically, and then decided to make the 3-year commitment to train in it fully. And it has been such a journey. When we did our very first training, which was beginning one, we were a hybrid cohort. So some of us were at home online, and some of us were, not me, but some of the other people were in London in person, because we were still navigating all the rules and regulations post-COVID. So, you know, I started this course at home in my little office, in my big pink chair, looking at a laptop, you know, seeing new faces through a screen and learning about the nervous system through a screen, and then eventually did the final 5 of the 6-day trainings, traveling to London each time for what are very, very intensive weeks of training. And there have just been so many ups and downs in the process. And as part of the process, I've worked with my own practitioner. So initially doing 2 somatic experiencing sessions a month with her. And then as time has gone on and I felt like I've needed less support in my life, reducing that down to a monthly session. And there are actually, to a certain extent, there are no words to really sum up like how powerful and life-changing this journey has been. And I'm just going to do my best to put some words to it. But I always say to people, you know, if they don't really know anything about somatic experiencing, always say it's really hard for me to explain in words. because it is, as the name suggests, something that needs to be experienced. And when I started this journey, I guess there were two ways of operating in the journey. There was part of me that really needed to get something, like, I need to heal. I need this to heal me. It was kind of like this grabby hands, like almost like, I want to say achiever part, but I don't actually think it was the achiever part. It felt like a neediness, the part of me that was so desperate to heal and so desperate to be well, that needed this work to do something for me. There was a sense of urgency. And now I know that that sense of urgency is just a reflection of the sympathetic activation in my nervous system. But there was part of me that really needed to get something. And then there was another part of me that was just like, I'm just showing up. I'm just in this process and I'm going to let this process do what it needs to do instead of trying to get anywhere. And that's the strategy that I would, for the most part, recommend when you're doing nervous system work. You know, we can't just be a little bit blasé about everything, because then we don't necessarily have the structure that we need to move forward in our journey. But when it comes to the nervous system work, I think it's about not having pressure and not having expectation, because pressure and expectation are things that we've often had too much of in the past, too much pressure in life and too much expectations that we constantly feel that we need to meet. And that's part of a lot of people's distress, is the pressure and expectations that have been unrelenting across life. So when we're working with the nervous system, it's better to kind of just surrender to the process. And this is something that I always say to my nurturing resilience clients, so the people who join the Nurturing Resilience Group program, is just be in the process instead of needing to get somewhere in the process. And that's really what the past 3 years have been about for me. And I remember when we did our very first training, we did like a very basic self-touch exercise. And it's kind of nice because this is going to come full circle as I share a little bit more, but we did just a very, very basic self-touch exercise. And I teach the same self-touch exercise in the Nurturing Resilience course, and it just had me in pieces. I remember we did this self-touch exercise and I was doing it and I was feeling into my body, and then it's like I just fell off a cliff. You know, the tears came. It just felt so, so low and so, so desperately emotional. And you know, being online, it was really hard because nobody can really be there to support you. They can only support you through a screen. So, you know, having these, like having a nervous system that is so, so tender and so, so sensitive. And my nervous system is sensitive anyway, but just really seeing the journey that I've been on across the past 3 years as this training has changed me, you know, internally, but then as a consequence of those internal changes, it's changed how I experience life as a whole and how I experience my body as a whole and my health as a whole, and just, you know, how I present myself in different aspects of my life. So it's been a wild ride, and it's like been a slow and steady, just like chipping away. And every single training I experience very differently. You're in just such a field of healing, I guess. But that doesn't always mean that it's pleasant, and that doesn't always mean that it's easy. It can also, and for the most part, it is always incredibly challenging to have to confront so much. And, you know, as each training went on, I kind of could feel there was like a little bit more capacity. When I did my second training, which was the first one I did in person in London, that was when I was just starting to add resistance training back into my life. And I remember like just doing like this teeny, teeny, tiny little workout in the apartment that I was staying in. Whereas then the next training I went to, I was able to join the gym, and I was able to do like go to the gym in the morning and do some weight training. And it's like time went on, I think, the more like a year ago, I was doing incline walking. So I'd added some cardio and gym into what I was doing. And then the training we had in September, it was just like I knew I could kind of do just like whatever I wanted. And then the same with this time. So it's been just really interesting to see the shift in capacity, you know, with every 6 months as the trainings have gone on. But this training in particular, it kind of felt in a way like it was like the culmination of this 3-year journey. It's like gradually, as time has been going on, you know, there's been more capacity in my nervous system. There's been more capacity in my life. And there's just been more capacity for myself to hold and process all those things that I've still been holding in my body unprocessed. You may be, as a listener, familiar with the book, like The Body Keeps the Score, or people say like the issues are in the tissues. And with chronic fatigue, I think there's not necessarily in every case, but I do think it's a common theme that there can be so much that we're holding on to. And it's the holding on and the holding in that is so energetically exhausting. And I think I've heard Gabor Mate use this analogy of like a beach ball, you know, one of those inflatable beach balls, which is obviously a great analogy for me living right by the beach. But if you think of like this big inflatable beach ball, and if you were to take it with you into the ocean or a swimming pool, then you should try and hold that beach ball underneath the water. It would take a lot of effort and a lot of work to just like hold it there. And that is synonymous to like all our unprocessed stuff, shall we call it, the unprocessed rage, the unprocessed grief, the unprocessed sadness, the unprocessed anger. Is there can be so much that we're holding in from the life experiences that we've had. And that is what is so fatiguing to the system, or that's what can keep the system in this stuck in this heightened state of activation. We need to find some sort of way to discharge. And in order for us to be able to discharge all the activation, we have to have the capacity to be able to feel that unprocessed sadness, that unprocessed grief, that unprocessed anger, that unprocessed rage without shutting down again. And it's a journey of building capacity. So we think of capacity as like the end goal that we want, because we want more capacity in our lives. We want more capacity to do more and experience more and, you know, just live a normal human life. But it's kind of like a little bit of a chicken and egg as well, because we also need to build capacity so that we can process the stuff, so that we can build more capacity, if that makes sense. So I kind of feel like where I'm sitting now talking to you is that the past 3 years have been this capacity building process. It's been 3 years of building the capacity in my system to process some of the things that I know I need to process. And just before I actually went on the training course, I was experiencing a lot of discharge. So this discharge is something that we cover in the Nurturing Resilience course, the next round of which is starting on Monday. But discharge happens when the body feels safe enough to do so, but when we discharge some of the activation of that sympathetic nervous system. And discharge shows up in many different ways. It can be burping or change in temperature. It can be crying. It can be gurgling in the belly. It can be shaking and trembling. And for me, I have, I guess, what I would call, if I was talking to a client, a highly charged system. So there's a lot of energy in my system, but that's sometimes what can be so exhausting, is because it's not settling and it's not becoming discharged. So before I went on the training, I was starting to experience some discharge, which was facilitated by a one-on-one session I had with my own therapist, where I was sort of really connecting with how much energy was in my system. And I was really learning how to discharge that for myself through shaking, particularly in the lower body. So it was almost like, now in reflection, it almost feels like my body was actually preparing for the training, because there was this discharge that was starting to happen and needing and wanting to happen as well. So the final module that we do as part of year 3 of the training is actually a touch-based module. the majority of the training up until this point in time is usually like you're seated, your client is seated, maybe every now and again you'll stand up, you'll do a little bit of movement, but it's mainly like seated and it's not really a hands-on model. And this particular training is like completely different in that we had massage tables and you're lying on a table and you're being touched, and we're using touch to facilitate the change in the nervous system. And I think I've shared a little bit about this in a previous episode where I talked a little bit about my history, a lot of surgeries, a lot of what we would call maybe quote medical trauma from a young age. And we did a little bit of work with medical trauma in year two. And it was actually, we did have a little bit of touch involved there, sort of just at that point in time, lying on the floor and maybe someone touching you somewhere in your body where you feel like you want to be touched. And that for me is, I always felt really, really good. So I've kind of known for a while that my body does really, really like this touch-based model. But also to say that it might be something that, you know, my body has also needed time to prepare for. And so this training was working with touch in various ways, working with the joints, so creating touch around specific joints like the ankles, the knees, the hips, the wrists, the elbows, the shoulder joint, working with the diaphragm structures in the body, working with the organs in the body, and working with using touch a little bit more so for developmental trauma. And so the thing with touch is it's nonverbal. There's not a lot of dialogue. There's not a lot of talking. Not that there necessarily is anyway when you're working with somatic experiencing, but it's a lot of just like sitting and being and feeling someone's hands on your body, not having an app, but it's a very active process of just like tracking the body and noticing what's happening in the body as the body feels the support in very, very specific places from the touch. And you may only be in like a whole 45-minute session or an hour-long session, you may only be touched in one place or two places for the whole time. And as a practitioner, it's about, you know, really noticing the dialogue happening between your hands and someone else's body, which one of our assistants said so beautifully is that, you know, touch is one of our first, it's the first language we develop as babies. You know, before we can talk and communicate, we communicate with touch by feeling and being felt. So it's a very, I want to say primitive, but it's also just like a very, very deep and important way in which we experience ourselves by feeling things and also by being felt. And in these sessions we're doing, you maybe just having someone, your hands, if you're a practitioner, your hands are on someone and you're really feeling the communication between the body and your hands, as well as using your eyes to track the physiology of the person that you're working with. And as somebody experiencing the session, you know, you're experiencing how that touch, however it is being given to you and in the place it's been given to you, is influencing your system. And we allow a lot of time for that to happen. And so for me personally, because across the week I worked with many different people and many different people had completely different experiences to me. So just to say that this is not a one size fits all approach, but for me personally, the touch was really, really supportive in facilitating some of the discharge in my body. And across, you know, four sessions that I experienced across the week, there was this sense of like starting to like tremble and shake. And as the week went on, there was more trembling and more shaking and bigger trembling and bigger shaking until there was a lot more integration. So the trembling wasn't just like upper body or lower body. The trembling was felt as a coherent experience from top to toe. So there's a sense of more connection and a sense of more organization. And these are the things that we're looking for, especially if you've listened to my episode talking a little bit about syndromal patterns, is that we're looking for more coherence and more organization and more connection in the body. And for me, the touch was just like a really beautiful way to discharge a lot of the things that I've been holding on to And also coming alongside a lot of tears as well. So a lot of discharge of sadness and grief, I think. And it's hard to say sometimes that some of that sadness and grief is just sadness and grief from the illness experience that I've had, and how much of that sadness and grief is also just from historical things that have happened in my life that have not been fully processed. You know, sometimes we don't have all the conscious answers, but there's definitely a sense of trust that, you know, whatever is needing to be released is being released. So for me, just a real building across the week of just experiencing more discharge of things that have probably been held onto for a really long time, and also just a greater sense of integration. And I was working with, we were in a small group working with other practitioners and who was working on my body. And I think something that just a really like beautiful, sweet moment from our session was just, she just said, like, it just feels like you're so full of energy and so full of life. And obviously that's the goal, right? When you've had this like chronic fatigue experience, chronic illness experience, you want to be full of energy and you want to be full of life, because we know how many times we've felt the complete opposite of that. And it's, that was definitely my experience in the moment as well, the sense of there's more space for my life force energy to really flow throughout my body, and I can feel the strength of it. But to have an outsider say, I can feel you, I can feel your life force, I can feel your aliveness, I can feel how much energy you actually have, it's that feeling felt experience, which I think is just so important for our healing. So that was a very, very special moment for me. And then I'm not too sure how much I can kind of share details just because of data protection and all of that, but I also did have the experience to be one of the demonstration and people, shall we say, where the course teacher, course facilitator practices on you in front of the entire room, which is about 60 other nervous systems, witnessing your nervous system go through a very big process. And that was something that was also really vulnerable for me, really courageous for me, and just also like incredibly transformational, obviously, because our trainer is, you know, she's absolutely fantastic. So the honor and the privilege to get to work with her and then do that with the support of, you know, 60 pairs of loving eyes on you, it was really, really special and really, really transformational. So there's been a lot to process, and it's definitely made me such a fan of touch work with chronic fatigue. And there's a few things that I'll share now, which may be helpful to you, the listener, is I think I've shared, sometimes I forget everything I've shared in these episodes, I've done so many now, but I do remember there was an episode where I talked about craniosacral therapy and how that helped me in my journey. And what I experienced in the craniosacral therapy is, even though it probably looks the same, someone lying on a massage bed and then, well, lying on a massage bed and then having a part of your body held, you know, that's what they do in craniosacral therapy. That's what we were technically doing in our SE training. But I think there's like an undercurrent of subtleties in terms of what's happening in those processes. But I had spoken about craniosacral therapy being very supportive for me when I think my body must have just been in like a really, really deep freeze. And it just helped to melt away some of that freeze state. And somebody wrote to me and they said they'd listened to the podcast, they'd tried craniosacral therapy, and it had really just made such a big difference to them. And I know often it can be tempting to hear something like that and be like, right, this is going to be the thing that helps me. And unfortunately, that's just not the case in these complex chronic illnesses. Not the same things don't work for everybody in the same way. But if there's instinctively something telling you to try it, then please at least give it a go, because that was the instinct I had. I just had this instinct like, I really need this. I just knew, some part of me just knew it was what I needed, and it really did help so much. And I did find somebody incredible to work with as well, which is always important. But I digress a little bit now. I guess what I'm trying to say is that there is really something about this non-verbal, hands-on approach which can be very, very supportive for people at certain stages in their journey. And I've got a couple of clients I've been working with who have highly charged systems. And, you know, I describe my system as highly charged. In comparison to these systems, my system is very calm. So these are very, very charged systems. And we've tried to do like a little bit of somatic experiencing work together, but it's actually even that has been too much. And then obviously I'm working online. I can't touch these people, you know, on a massage bed, although maybe that would be really supportive for them. So very often I am referring people like that to craniosacral therapists, because there just is something about not getting sucked into the dialogue and having the touch-based work, which can be incredibly settling for the nervous system. And that's really what I wanted to share today, because it just might be the thing that not all of you need to hear, but it might be the thing that one or two of you need to hear. I'm hoping more than one or two, but even if it only helps one or two people, that's absolutely fine with me, is that maybe there is just some need for this touch-based work just to create some shifts in your system that the other things that you're doing right now have not been able to shift. And I really think it's important to find the right people to work with, and to, I guess it's not quite like getting a massage. Massages are great. I've done a lot of massage in my time, but to experience something that's going just a little bit more, even more gently, I guess, than a massage, because sometimes massages can make people crash, where it's just this little bit of very, very supportive touch on a small part of the body that feels safe to be touched, and just that kind of like holding and containment while the body is allowed to do its thing, instead of trying to make the body do something, which can be incredibly powerful for healing. So I don't even know if I've really said what I needed to say in this episode, but I hope that there's maybe just like a little piece of you, a little part of you that maybe something has connected with here that can open up some opportunities and possibilities for you to explore on your journey. I guess the messages just to take home would be to consider if touch could be, or some sort of touch-based work could be supportive in your journey, and, you know, who might that be from, what's available to you within your budget, within your area, and making sure you find the right people to work with. And that's just like a felt sense of like, yes, this is the right person for me kind of feeling. But then, and then I guess also just highlighting that this stuff takes time. You know, I described this like 3-year journey where I just did a little bit of self-touch and I fell apart. And then I was lying on a massage table, like having someone else touch me, you know, trembling and shaking and integrating and just having this like very, very big process that my system would never have been able to even access 3 years ago. So it really does take time. And we all want to feel better yesterday, but we can't rush the journey. We just have to be as kind and gentle and compassionate and honoring of our systems as we can. And that doesn't mean being wishy-washy and not showing up to do the things we need to do to take care of ourselves, because there will probably be other things that we need to do physically to take care of ourselves. But I guess it's just a case of like to trust the journey and find ways to, as much as you can and as hard as it can be, enjoy the journey. Because as I've said many times, and I'll continue to say, it's a marathon and not a sprint. And when we can find these little pockets of okayness and joy and gratitude and safety so that we can be in the journey instead of trying to rush through it, that's going to be a lot more supportive for the system. So I think I'm done. I think that's all I'll share today, but I do apologize if this is a bit of a garbled episode, but I just felt like it was important to share a little bit and express what I wanted to express. And just to remind you that if you would like to begin your marathon journey of working on your nervous system, My Nurturing Resilience Group program starts on Monday. And if you're listening to this on Friday, today is the last day to join. And if you're listening to this after Friday, you can always just send me a message and we can make a plan for you. But apart from that, just wishing you a wonderful weekend or a wonderful day whenever you're listening to this. And I'll see you in the next episode.